That was Lead Belly and his Bully of the Town, and we are looking for the town bully. We all understand. Trump has announced himself he is bully number one, and so it's up to all of us. It's National Football League. I mean, if you get the owners, I mean, now you got something. I believe that Otis Richmond has joined us. Are you there, Norman Otis Richmond?
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Norman. You know, we want to ask you, of course, about once again, the upsurge led by black athletes. How important? Look at it in history. Jack Johnson, Joe Louis. I haven't heard their names, by the way. Somebody ought to say, hey, if you're going to say Muhammad Ali, make sure you say Jack Johnson.
Because
he looked for the town bully. And we've been having black leadership on this for a long time. And many of them, much of it has come from athletes. But so I want to get your reaction. What do you make of the voices that have come forward over the weekend?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that North Korea, black people in the Western Hemisphere, Canada, the United States, and in Grenada, have always had a relationship with North Korea, an open relationship. And I don't want to go into that, but your previous guest,
did. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
This is North Korea Week at CIUT.
Yeah, and you know the African population in the Western Hemisphere and the progressive forces have never bought the okey-doke about, North Korea. I mean, I think Kim is looking at what happened to Saddam Hussein and what happened to Muammar Gaddafi and saying, it's not going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
in terms of the athletic thing, I think this is part of the radical black tradition, and it's not going by the Hollywood script. You know, the Hollywood script is that the black people, especially the black people in North America, have never really rebelled against anything. And we know that the $40 million slave is in revolt at the present time, but there's always been the $40 million slave, like you were mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he made $40 million, but Jack Johnson didn't take any stuff. Ali didn't take any stuff. Mm-hmm. Kurt Flood was if it weren't for Kurt Flood, we would the baseball player Kurt Flood, we
yes.
wouldn't have free agency. If it weren't for men and women athletes that stood up in the 1968 Olympics. Mm-hmm. We would not have what we have now.
And they take it on the chin. These are heroic people because they martyred themselves. Because everybody always gives them the speech, hey, look, and you're making money, don't say anything. But they put themselves on the line.
Yeah, and you know, another thing I wanted to say is that Otto Bolden, the great sprinter from Trinidad and Tobago, I remember before I even had an email address, he was like, they call him the world's fastest geek. I mean, he's a commentator and all of that. But I mean, this in terms of the social media situation, he's a giant on that. And I think that Colin Kaepernick, one of the problems they have with Colin Kaepernick is that Colin Kaepernick has a presence on social media and he knows how to use it. And he is basically educating, a lot of people. And Colin Kaepernick, I got an email today from John Woodford, who used to be the editor of Muhammad Speaks. And he, I guess I can say this, but he's critical of Colin Kaepernick. He's basically saying that Colin Kaepernick is didn't vote, and Colin Kaepernick is not. Well, he's really critical of Colin Kaepernick. I'll try to make that email.
I'll try to digest that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I will make that email available to you. But I mean, Colin Kaepernick is like a united front. You know, some people, a lot of people, not just John Woodford, but a lot of people think that Colin Kaepernick there are people that are taking more radical positions. You know, like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some people basically saying that African people in America are a colony and shouldn't do anything. I know that I took the position that I was a colonial subject and I shouldn't fight for America. I shouldn't pay taxes. I shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. My cousin Hardy Williams, I think he's listening in California, in 1985, he took the same position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is nothing new in terms of, mm-hmm. contrary to popular belief, there are some people of African origin that were born in North America. Mm-hmm. And we weren't born knowing everything, but we developed like every other human being and realized that, hey, man, we're a colony, and what are we saluting? The flag, the man who enslaved us. I mean, at one time they had us so brainwashed in the United States. We hated the Klan. I mean, we hated the Communist Party more than we hated the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes, that was mandatory, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yes. This is Norman Otis Richmond, bluesologist and broadcaster, writer. Norman, let's just we'll blend in the information, because inevitably this thing is big, and there's going to be voices heard from all over the place. Kareem Jabbar and Jim Brown and, my goodness, all kinds of people talking, and it's not going to die down. But there's a great figure who she had a lot of impact, Lorraine Hansberry. There's been a documentary made about her. And I know you saw it, and we want to know your opinion of that film and something about Lorraine.
Well, the film is called Sighted Eyes, Feeling Heart, and it was done by a couple out of the United States, a man and a wife. Having a senior moment, can't remember the name right now, but they were here. It's going to be shown on PBS in February, but the world premiere was held right here in Toronto, and it talked about Lorraine Hansberry. Lorraine Hansberry was a communist. She was a lesbian. She was a pan-Africanist before Africa was really Africa's always been.
None of these things supported by the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, yeah. And her grandfather, I'm not a grandfather, but her uncle was William Leo Hansberry, who ran the African History Department at Howard University. And he was interested in ancient African history. And we're talking about the 20s and 30s. So basically, he's not even in the film, because I mentioned him during the question and answer period. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, she joined the Communist Party in 1952, and she did not waver. She died in 34, and mm-hmm. she never wavered. Mm-hmm. And she, had Mississippi roots. Her father was from Mississippi. He was into the struggle. It was disillusioned. Went to Mexico. Died in Mexico because he couldn't take the racism. Lorraine was 15 years old, and her father died in Mexico. And she went to New York in 1952, started working for Freedom Ways, which was a publication started by Paul Robeson. Yep. And she worked for them 2 or 3 years. And then she became the playwright, and she wrote this play, Raisin in the Sun. She was real tight with Godfrey Cambridge. I think Godfrey Cambridge, for people that don't know it, had a Guyanese background. But Godfrey Cambridge, Kwame Ture at that time, he was Stokely Carmichael, and Nina Simone. They were like key spars, as they say in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. But Young Gifted in Black was Raisin in the Sun was a play that she wrote, and that's, of course, Raisin in the Sun is taken from a Langston Hughes poem.
What happened?
Young Gifted in Black came out of that, and Nina Simone wrote the song Young, Gifted, in Black. And then, you know, it goes on to talk about the fact that she married a Jewish gentleman who was a leftist, and she was a lesbian. Mm-hmm. So she had relationships with women, and her mm-hmm. her husband always had, even when they broke up, they had cordial relationships. Yeah.
Well, what's your assessment of does the film capture all this? Are they honest about her politics and that sort of thing?
Yes. They do not apologize for her being a communist. They do not apologize for being a lesbian. That's not a problem, but they do not emphasize the fact that you have all of these scenes in there where they're talking about these things dealing with Africa, and you would never know that unless you knew Lorraine Hansberry's history and the fact that she was tied. She had these African links, you know. And when I say African links, I mean she supported the Mau Mau. She supported what was taking place in Angola. What was taking place in the struggle against apartheid. And
you described her as a militant communist, a black playwright, and she walked the walk. She worked at Freedom Voice, and she was on those picket lines and in those marches. And she's not just a famous person, but somebody who went out there when the meeting was called, she attended. When the march went on, she was marching.
Oh, she went to there was a meeting. James Baldwin assembled a group of people to go to the White House to meet with Robert Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And it was James Baldwin, Harry Belafonte, I think Lena Horne was there, and James Baldwin. Boy. And what's her name basically walked out of the meeting. Lorraine basically says, you're talking a lot of, we're on radio, so you're talking a whole bunch of doo-doo. Uh-huh. And
The Kennedys were tough on when they had black visitors. They always went through a little ritual that they lectured people. Jack Kennedy famously told Martin Luther King, "You're going to have to do this and this and this."
I mean, well, Lorraine was not Ban Ki-moon or she was not Ban Ki-moon or the brother from Ghana.
Kofi Annan.
She was from the
same tribe. We will be speaking to him later.
She was from the same tribe as Nina Simone and Peter Tosh and Gil Scott-Heron.
Mm-hmm.
And Fela Kuti.
A point about her that I looking forward to talking to you today. I noticed her father that you referred to, who gave up. I mean, just really got so bitter that he went to Mexico. He attempted to buy a home. As a matter of fact, he bought it. Home in what was called a white area, and
they came
down on him and forced him to leave that house, which is,
that is correct,
Raising of the Sun.
Right.
That's a historic case. That's not a little case. That was a major case. And by the way, is it not true? You would know better than I. Chicago is the most segregated city in America.
Chicago is a special spot because the woman that did the film, she argued that, and I hope Peter Rosenthal is not listening, but she said that, when people in Chicago went to New York, they were like laughing at the people in New York. They would say, you got these white folks running this and running that. They say, in Chicago, we run everything because Chicago is so segregated.
Right.
White folks just let black people have, they had insurance companies, and they were almost like the Caribbean or Africa in terms of they had
that is one of the results of a sharp line where you cross that street, you have entered another country, and Chicago
They pointed out that the black people in the people from Chicago would come and say, "Look, white folks are counting your money." It's like, come on, this is, we don't allow that in Chicago. Like, we, as the Jamaicans say, we run things, And the filmmaker who did the film, she was a black woman from Pennsylvania, and she was basically saying, I'm not from New York or I'm not from Chicago, but she was basically saying that these Chicago black folks were self-determination, they were really into self-determination, and they were not, licky-licky, passive type of people.
Yeah, no, not at all. Chicago is it's known for its brawling, but I think it's very poignant. I hope people will look closely at the story of Lorraine Hansberry, but also you've already done it. Refer to not just to her, but to the family and her father, because the Raisin in the Sun is based on a real experience that she
She witnessed. That is correct. And, you know, the people that played in that was like Sidney Poitier. What's her name? Ruby Dee. Glenn Turman, who is a great actor. I think, married Aretha Franklin, but Glenn Turman, Lou Gossett was in it. And I think Ivan Dixon, who I had the pleasure of meeting when he came up here and we took him to Third World Bookstore. Ivan Dixon played the African that Lorraine Hansberry had a woman in Raising the Sun that was Africa conscious, and there was a split between the Black American household, and she was into the whole African thing because she wanted to marry this brother from Africa, and I think it was played by Ivan Dixon, who played in that film Nothing But a Man. And I met him. He came here, and he told me the story that Paul Robeson had set Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte down and told him, do not make the same mistake that I made. You know, basically, you have to make some compromises. And he said Sidney adhered to that, but Harry went the other way. Harry just went crazy because they say the first thing you walk into Harry Belafonte's house is the first thing you see is a big portrait of Paul Robeson.
Yep. So he defied him by putting his picture on the wall. He said, okay, it's me and Paul.
No, I'm saying, but he if you ever seen a concert with Harry Belafonte, 90% of it, he's preaching against U.S. imperialism.
Yes. No, Harry he's still punching, and what a great figure. I'll bet he supports Kaepernick,
or he
supports the NFL guys.
He's met with Kaepernick. There are pictures of him.
Oh, that's right.
Him and Kaepernick together.
Oh, these are great times. Norman Otis Richmond, thank you very, very much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, we'll talk again. This is the Tater Report, CIUT. Facebook.com/TaylorReport and SoundCloud, Phil?
SoundCloud.com/Taylor-Report.
We are hyphen on SoundCloud.
Right.
All right. Have we got a little more of the Bully song? We'll play the Bully song, and then we have a few more things to say. Mm-hmm.